pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
And we welcome you back. And it's been a while since we talked to Coach Luke Fickell. We had a chance to get to know him well when he was the head coach at Cincinnati. And what an amazing job he did there taking the Bearcats to the playoffs a couple of years ago. He is now at the University of Wisconsin. Coach, thank you for joining us today. I know it's been a busy time of the year, but how are you?
Well, I'm doing well, man. We actually went away for 7 days for camp, and today we came back to campus. So it's that that first day off for our guys. So I'm doing well.
Yeah, I mean, I know this is some of these questions are old, considering you've been there for a while and have been able to indoctrinate yourself, especially at the end of last season. But you know, transitions are never easy. But it's from all indications, it sounds like this thing is going really well for you. How do you dive into something like this with really no time to breathe?
I guess you just kind of, I don't want to say you get used to it, because it's not a great thing when you're always moving around, I don't think. But I think you know what you're getting into. You know, I think that was probably the biggest thing for me to get here as soon as I possibly could and just dive into things, so that I was hoping by the time we got to like a spring ball, I'd feel more comfortable. And for sure, by the time I got to fall camp, we'd feel more comfortable, just because the more time you're around the guys in the program, you get a better grasp of what's going on. So it's been a whirlwind, like all year ones, I think, are, you know. But I think that there's some things I was fortunate enough to be able to do and get here and take a lot of guys with me that I've that we've worked together. So I think it gives us just a better chance of understanding each other as we go through, you know, this first year, first season.
I think I've asked you this before when you were at Cincinnati, because and sometimes circumstances just present themselves. The year you were in the playoffs, it seemed like every time I looked up, someone else was linking you to their job. But you were able to withstand a lot of that. But what was so unique to you and your family, especially to make this move now?
Well, timing had a lot to do with it. I think that just the general for us and the family, just where we were with kids and the ages, and kind of went into the year and said, hey, if we're ever going to do something, this would, you know, might be a year, because if not, I don't know. I mean, I don't think that, you know, I'd want to pick up and move my kids as they get, you know, kind of really entrenched into high school. And then the uniqueness, I just, the Big Ten and where it's going and where everything in college football is going was one of those things that was just weighing on me over and over again. I know that at Cincinnati we're going to the Big 12, but the uniqueness of, you know, being back in the Big Ten and then at a place that I really had an incredible amount of respect and admiration for, not knowing a ton about Wisconsin other than playing against them and preparing for them, but had an incredible amount of just admiration for, you know, what Coach Alvarez and they had done here. It a lot of things just came aligned, and it became a something for us as a family and me as a coach. It was something I couldn't pass up.
I know, Coach, not to go back, but you were part of the movement to get to help Cincinnati facilitate the move to the Big 12, and now the chaos that is currently reigning. But it hasn't escaped your new league. By this time next year, there'll be four new members, all from the West. I realize this is a very busy time for you, but just as you catch a break and look around at the landscape of college football, what are your thoughts?
Only four new members? Well, I hesitate when people say that, because by tomorrow, the next day, or next week, or next month, who knows what that'll be, you know, as things continue to evolve. And I know for me, just I don't try to look too far down the road, but that was one of the things, like, where are we going with college football in particular? And that's was a big deal for me of coming here, just to say, okay, wherever it's going to go, I know that the Big Ten and the SEC are going to be at the forefront of whatever is going on. And to be honest with you, I don't know. I don't spend a whole lot of time trying to figure it out, trying to have a whole bunch of opinions, because when you do, you lose sight on the 125 guys that you got here. And, you know, these things, you know, are constantly evolving with the amount of kids you have and the amount of personalities and you know, but where they'd keep changing the end line and the goalpost from all the different things that you now are dealing with, whether it's NIL to transfer to whatever it is in college football. So for me, it doesn't leave a whole lot of time to think and spend a bunch on, hey, where's this thing going to be and what is my opinion of it?
I guess if there is an advantage being in Madison, you're somewhat centrally located in the middle of the country, and now that the Big Ten literally spans coast to coast, the travel won't be as bad as it could be.
No, I think you're finding the silver lining to some of this. I like it. I wasn't thinking about that when you were trying to decide on what was a good fit for all these things. But I think in general that's true. And you know, having a even for everybody talks about the other sports things. The unique thing about Madison is you've got a large city, and there's a lot of things that provides as far as even travel and things like that. So I think that it is a uniqueness of being centrally located and being obviously the capital and a big enough city that I think it's going to continue to grow, and it's going to give us a lot of opportunities, whether it's, you know, where we have to travel to or even getting people here for recruiting, because that's a big, big deal.
We're talking to Coach Luke Fickell, who, of course, is at Wisconsin. You said something at the very beginning, and I wanted to go back to it for a second, and it was unique. You went to, I think it's one of your sister's schools, as part of the system for your camp. How does that work, and what do you gain from just going somewhere else to begin the training camp?
I think it's invaluable to get off of campus. I think it's invaluable to just get your guys in a place where they're not real familiar. So the distractions are just, you take away a lot of things like that. You know, even for us as new coaches and a new staff, it was only 7 days. I wish it would be more like 12 to 14, just because I think you get so much more done when you're in a new environment that's, obviously taking care of you very well, and your kids have nothing else to do. You know, there is no television. I mean, they're very poor cell service and internet. So they spend a lot more time together. And it does a lot of things outside of just the game of, the schemes of things that you're doing. And I think in year one, it's really, really important to me, and it will be important as we continue to go on. But I think in year one, it's even more important.
You certainly are very familiar with this league, having played and coached in it. But now that you're the head coach at one of the big names in the Big Ten, what does it feel like to be there now, to having experienced it already, but finally now the season, the complete season, not just a game, is in front of you?
To be honest, I never really thought about it, right? I mean, it just, you jump in, you do it, you make the move, you get here, you jump in, your family's going through a little bit more of a difficult situation than you are, because, all of a sudden you just adopted 120 new guys, and so you're constantly busy and not thinking about anything but that, until I walked into Big Ten Media Day. And that was probably the first time it was kind of surreal. And it just kind of hit me in the face a little bit. And, whether it was, I'm talking 15, 20, 30 seconds, minute, whatever, just the recognizing all the, all that this really entails, the history of the Big Ten, and seeing a lot of the other, even coaches and what had gone on. I mean, it's definitely different. And, that was probably the first time, because, I got a little glimpse of it in that 2012 season, not really as, in that situation at Ohio State, but it was the first time that taken this job that I had kind of, recognized that, the grandness of all things involved, not just in college football, but the Big Ten and then the history that I've had. It was a moment that had come like full circle and was kind of surreal for me.
Do you think back at that, because, you were, the change was made, I think, late May, early June, not to go back, but, you had no time to be prepared for the cauldron that is Ohio State. And what's that been now, 11, 12 years? And I mean, do you ever just think about the path you've been on and what you've accomplished since that moment?
Yeah, because there were so many mistakes I made in those 7-8 months that it's things that I bring back up, you know, on a regular basis. I mean, it was, you know, taking over and coaching the bowl game with the situation that was here with Jim Leonard. And, you know, that was a unique situation, but I went straight back to that exact kind of time and had been in that situation before to a lot of other things just in, you know, starting off at Cincinnati and the little experience I had of being in that seat and just the difference that it brings to you on an everyday basis. So, I go back to it. I reference it, and you know, sometimes I run from it. But nonetheless, it was a incredibly unique situation and time. But it was invaluable, I think, in the growth as me, not as a coach, but more so as a leader.
Well, Coach, I don't want to keep you, but I do want to thank you, though. You've always been so gracious to pop on here. It's not something that's mandated in your situation up there, but we appreciate it, and I know the viewers and listeners do as well. Thank you so much.
Paul, I appreciate you having me, man. Thank you. I'll
always
see you
great.
This season.
You got it. Hope to see you soon. Luke Fickell, who's just fantastic. We've got to know him a number of years ago. We've seen him a couple of times. Obviously, we saw him in Dallas when they played Alabama. We saw him the next week, and I think we saw him in Vegas, too. So we have really kept up with him throughout his most recent career. What a great football coach. We'll be right back.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. Matt is up next in Texas. Hey, Matt. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. Good afternoon. So I woke up early this morning, turned on Netflix, and watched the new Johnny Manziel documentary.
Tell us about it.
And, you know, I don't want to give away. There's not much to give away. We all lived it, right? But I think, you know, it gave a little bit of PTSD for as an Aggie. I think a lot of people forget A&M wasn't used to being in the spotlight at all. It was weird for us when we went to the SEC. Just being on ESPN in general, before we made that move, we weren't ever on ESPN except to maybe show a couple highlights and move on. So to be in the limelight, be, you know, have any kind of negative press when Johnny was there, we had to take the good with the bad, and, you know, a lot of Aggies embraced it, and a lot of Aggies had mixed feelings, but I think a lot of people forget that part of it as an Aggie. But as far as the documentary goes, I think it does a good job telling the story, and it's very raw. It's very real. It's hard to watch. It's hard to watch to see how someone can do all the things they want to do in life and then just throw it away for not having the discipline or whatever you want to say to live out his dream. But no, I think it's a good documentary, and it seems that Johnny's with his family, and it came out, I think, a week or so ago that he's opening a bar in College Station, which is very on brand for Johnny, and I think he'll make plenty of money there. I'm sure there will be plenty of scandal around that.
Eventually. In fact, we have the director on in a few minutes. I ran into Johnny at a game somewhere last year, and I had a nice chat with him, and I was impressed because I had a chance to be around him while he was playing at A&M, and you know, nothing I say here can add to what you already know, but he was a different person in almost every respect.
Yeah, and I wish him and his family all the best. He'll always be a legend for every Aggie, including me. He made A&M what we are today. We wouldn't have Kyle Field and how big it is today if it wasn't for him.
No, you're right. No. Hey, thank you very much, and he is he's someone we have talked to a little bit, but I would like to talk again with him just because I think you'll see it in the documentary, which I have not seen, but I've seen enough about it. But we'll talk to the director coming up here very shortly. Let's check out Doug in Tulsa. You're on the air. Hello, Doug.
Hey, Boomer Center, Paul. I was going to say Manziel's a jerk, but if you say he's changed, then good for him.
By the way, Doug, it's not like I did a psychiatric evaluation. I mean, I was talking to him at a football game.
Right.
he seemed different.
Well,
but
I hope he's doing well. I really do. But, man, he was something else when he was playing. So, now that the Pac-12 has gone to the pearly gates, I'm sitting here thinking about the playoffs for next year, and that's got to be good news for the remaining conferences, right? I mean, there's going to be at least one more school, probably from the SEC, maybe one more from the Big Ten. Now that the Pac-12 is gone, we don't have to at least worry about their champion, at least one new school, right?
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm not even going to attempt to answer that because we got the guy on in about an hour who will sit at the head of that table, Greg Sankey. So give us an hour and 10 minutes, and that will be certainly a significantly early question for him, considering his influence over college athletics. Scott is up next in Missouri. Hello, Scott.
Hey, Paul, thanks for having me on. Now that I'm retired, I can watch every day.
Well, thank you.
But to go back to some things you've been saying about the hardships on the student athletes now that these conferences are realigning, I have to agree with you. I had a bunch of friends in college who worked a job while they went to school. Some of them had two jobs that would go to a second job when they got a few days off from the one job they had. Essentially working 6-7 days a week every day and then going to school. And I'm not trying to be the bad guy and saying that it's easy. I don't believe it is easy. But I think there's been students and kids doing this for years, and it's just part of it.
Well, that's right, Scott. You're 100% correct, and it will be made more difficult. But there's not a young person playing any sports at any school that doesn't accept that going in.
Right, and these student athletes, I believe they're a little bit better taken care of than just your normal students who are working jobs. They have the training table, things of that nature. These kids are still having to make their own meals a lot of times when they come home from work.
Well, very true. Hey, thank you, Scott. Thank you very much. We will continue. Bob is in Norman, Oklahoma. Hey, Bob.
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
Very well. Thank you.
I was wanting to get your feedback on this. I'm going back in history and thinking that the NCAA is kind of the one who started this whole problem back when they blew up the Southeast Conference when they put the death penalty on SMU.
Well,
what do you feel?
I mean, that did help bring the Southwest Conference to an end, but I don't think you could say that they did anything else other than what they should have done. There's never been a school in the history of the NCAA that's ever begged for the death penalty. I mean, you see characters from every walk of life who want to walk up to the line and then walk over it and challenge the authority to do something about it. They did more than that. They were already on probation. They were arrogant. They were belligerent. And I think if the NCAA had not shut them down, they would have given every other school license to cheat like bandits. We'll take a break. More to come. We'll talk about the Manziel documentary, which is now on Netflix, in just a moment. The commissioner of the Southeastern Conference is 1 hour away.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hey, George is up next in Oxford, Mississippi. Hey, George.
Hey, Paul, how are you, sir?
Doing well, thank you.
Thank you for taking my calls. I appreciate that, sir.
You got it.
Top 20, I believe. A daughter graduated from Alabama. I've been to Alabama. Hey, what you think? Who you think's gonna win? What do you think Ole Miss is gonna be?
Well, I think Ole Miss has a chance to be have a really good season. Their problems are obvious. They got road games at two of the top three teams in the country, and they just have to find games that they can turn. And I'm really eager to hear what Kiffin does with the quarterback situation. I mean, I think he's got a good one. Does he have a great one? That is entirely possible.
I apologize. I interrupted. Spencer might be in here, but I would go with Jackson all the way.
Well, I think that's where I would start too. I think, but what are you predicting as far as a record?
How many games? 11 before 12. The 12. I would predict 10-2.
Okay. Well, that's optimistic, George. a little more optimistic than I am. Thank you. I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing with you. Let me remind the audience, we're an hour away from speaking to Greg Sankey, and we've had many memorable conversations with Commissioner Sankey since we have been doing this. But this is one that I think a lot of people around the country are really eager to hear what he has to say about the expansion, the realignment, the chaos there, how it affects his league, does his league expand, and what does it mean to the CFP? We've also been talking about this Johnny Manziel documentary, Untold Johnny Football, which is now airing on Netflix. Ryan Duffy, who has directed it. It's always great to catch up with Ryan. Ryan, first of all, thank you very much. It's good to see you again.
Thank you, Paul. Big fan. Appreciate being here.
Thank you very much. Well, this one is fairly self-explanatory. Most people remember Johnny's football very well. So when you have a subject like this, and a lot of these are very well known, but this one's fairly recent, take us through your process of making this thing happen.
Yeah, you know, it actually started with the last doc I made for the Untold series, which was the Manti Te'o doc almost exactly a year ago. obviously the source material for that took us into that Heisman ceremony, and you know, I saw a lot of Johnny popping up in there, obviously, and started thinking about, you know, where he's at. And we generally find that those 10-year kind of look backs are kind of the sweet spot, right? You got enough distance from the events that you can talk about it with a bit of perspective. It doesn't feel so hot and visceral, but it's not so far in the rear view that you kind of lose track of it a little bit. So felt like the time was right to maybe look back at what happened with Johnny and provide maybe some additional context that folks didn't know.
Ryan, clearly he is important, but a lot of documentaries don't always have time or significant time with the subject. What was this one like with him?
Yeah, it all hinges on Johnny's availability and openness to doing this. And you can't kind of square peg round hole these things, especially the process we've got over here. These are long interview days. I sat with Johnny for the better part of 4 full interview days, hours and hours. I think, you know, the main thing that I've learned in doing a lot of these with athletes is the first few hours are kind of just breaking down the PR training, right? You get a lot of expected answers, I guess is the polite way to put it. And then you get to know people. And Johnny and I started that process well before we ever picked up the cameras. He was super generous with his time and also with his family and network. We kind of got connected to all the people in his inner circle and all the other folks who were there along for the ride with him, from his agent to Cliff Kingsbury to the folks down at A&M, and pretty much had full access.
Ryan, I realize you're always trying to find new and interesting and you know, big moments. You're a filmmaker. You have your own approach, and certainly you're extremely highly regarded in the art. With him, what stood out? What really did you find that maybe you think the audience will be either you know, surprised by, or maybe think differently of him and that time?
Yeah, it's a great question, because it's one I ask myself a lot, right? You kind of embarking on these things, which are long and arduous processes. They take up the better part of a year. You better feel pretty confident that you're answering a real question that you have, because if you're not curious, the audience certainly won't be. So, you know, I think my question there, look, I watched the Johnny football phenomenon from afar, like every other college football fan. I was living in the Northeast at the time, so I wasn't in the beating heart of it. But I wanted to understand what happened on a real basic level. I think one of the reasons that we all love sports as much as we do is because you get a satisfactory outcome. You tune into a game and you kind of know one way or another, whether the team you're rooting for wins or loses, there's going to be a decision at the end. And Johnny's story didn't really end, or it didn't end in a way I think that felt very satisfactory to a lot of the people who had watched it. And whether they thought he was going to boom or bust in the NFL, it still just didn't feel like there was that real conclusive kind of final act to Johnny's career. And certainly he's only 30 years old, but the whole story is a work in progress. So I wanted to understand from the inside out what actually happened in that white hot kind of 5-6 year span between the Heisman magic carpet ride at A&M and then the fallout in Cleveland, what that felt like to be inside of that story. And what we found ultimately is this duality, right, between Johnny Manziel, the 18-year-old kid, good old Texas boy, and then Johnny Football, this persona that he inhabited for a few years there. But I think part of what the doc shows is that was constructed, not constructed in some big conspiracy theory way, but constructed by the massive machinery that is college football and all of the varying interests that collide inside of it.
I mean, art is hard to define, but when you go into a process like this and then you start trying to put it into a reasonable time for people to consume, is there a method, or do you just let the story tell itself?
Yeah, it's kind of, I wish there was a method. It would be easier to make these things. There's a few ideas, and each one is its own beast, that's for sure, within the Untold series. But we usually start with archive as filmmakers. That's, at least for this show, kind of the skeleton key for us that unlocks everything else. Interviews are great, obviously. Shooting, you know, B-roll with subjects is fantastic. It's important to thread the story together to show where people are at today. For us, if there's not that treasure trove at the heart of just a great batch of unseen footage, whether it's Johnny highlights from Tyvee or old childhood footage that shows the family dynamic a little bit more, we can trace that relationship between Johnny and Paul, not just at A&M when kind of they were butting heads a little bit, but more so where that came from, what that family dynamic really is within the Manziels. That's when we get really, really excited. So that's always the starting point for us, is there great archival that we can really dig into, understand this story a little bit more, and then build out from there with interviews and other characters.
Ryan, I realize when you're in the middle of something like this, it's hard to see sunlight. That's all filmmakers do. But you also have to be thinking ahead a little bit. And I'm not asking you to reveal too much, but how many projects are working while you're doing one, trying to go, okay, when this will stop on X date, we'll put it together, and then it's not like I take a year off. I mean, you keep working, don't you?
Yeah, we're right into the next batch right now. So we had the Jake Paul film, the new season of Untold is four different stories premiering every Tuesday this month in August. So Jake Paul kicked us off last week. Johnny, obviously, is today. We've got a great one on the Balco steroid scandal coming up next week. And then the Swamp Kings, of course, which is the Tebow Meyer era Florida teams that's coming up at the end of the month, right before college football season, as of course you know. That we're really excited about, and we're already into the next batch. So we're in pre-production on the next five of these, and in development for the next five or six stories. So we're always looking for the next good one, and there's no shortage of them out there.
No, it's funny, as you mentioned the Swamp Kings, I was trying to think in the back of my mind. I mean, I believe I met with one of the teams for that on in May of the previous year. So it's an example of these things are not done overnight. They're a long, long process. Well, I cannot wait to see it. It's airing on Netflix. And Ryan, thanks for making time for us. It's always good to catch up with you.
Thank you so much, Paul. It's great to see you.
You bet. Ryan Duffy on the Manziel doc, which is out right now, The Untold Johnny Football on Netflix. We'll talk a little bit later in the month about the Swamp Kings. We'll get Tebow on here one day, because I ran into Tim right after I had spent the day with the crew, and for the life of me, I'm not really sure why they wanted to talk to me. But he told me a year ago some of the stuff that was going to be in it. And if you're a Florida fan, you may not be of the faint and hearted. We'll take a break. The commissioner of the Southeastern Conference probably needs his own doc about how he has maneuvered or outmaneuvered almost everyone else in the field. He'll join us at the bottom of the next hour. We'll come back right after this.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Back. We continue. The commissioner will join us in a little while. Looking forward to that. And let's check in with Rudy in California. Hello, Rudy.
Hello, Mr. Pavon. How are you doing today? I hope you're having a good day.
Thank you.
I was just wondering your opinion about, since hopefully I haven't seen anything or heard anything, that SC will still play LSU in the opener of next year. Do you feel that more SEC teams should go west of the Mississippi and play like a traditional power like SC?
And, I do, Rudy. Not only that, this year you have, of course, Auburn going to Cal. You've had, I think those games are great. I mean, they're great experiences for fans, players, and everyone else.
Do you buy that excuse about the time change and whatnot all the time?
No, I do
Being
not.
That, you know, there's power schools, you know what I'm saying? Because SC will play anybody anywhere. But yet it seems like the SEC always very rarely goes to the West. And I was just wondering, like, do you think it's fair sometimes that we have to go east, but they don't want to come back as a home and home game?
Yeah, I mean, I really don't know the particulars of all that, but I think fans. I remember in about 20 years, I went with Alabama. They played at UCLA. It was a big deal. All fans talked about in the offseason, having a game at the Rose Bowl. Hey, thank you. I appreciate your call. Thank you very, very much. John in Atlanta, you're on the air. Hello, John.
Hey, Paul. How are you this afternoon?
Very well. Thank you.
Great. I'm giving you a call. I know you've got the commissioner coming up, Paul, in just a few minutes. I'd love to know if you're aware that the SEC championship game tickets have been restricted to only 8 per person. Only a person can only purchase 8 tickets now, and this is a big change from what they've done previously, and I'm just curious why this change has occurred, and if you could ask the commissioner about that.
Is there an explanation in the notification? I have not heard that.
No. It's just a new change in the SEC championship game policy. And I know Jim Sullivan is the director of championship ticket operations in the SEC, and he comes from a ticket broker background. And I would just be real curious why they made the change, and I'd like to know where those tickets are going to go.
John, I will see what I can find out. Thank you for bringing that up. First, I've heard of that. Vernon is in Oklahoma. Hello, Vernon. Good afternoon.
Paul, I really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
One thing I have not heard any discussion about, like the Southeastern Conference, the Big Ten want to enhance their television packages and their scheduling and strength of the conference. But one way of really doing that would be to get rid of the weak sisters, like Northwestern in the Big Ten, Vanderbilt in the Southeastern Conference. They don't really add anything to the television contract, and for its power, the conference are basically always at the bottom. You'd have a double benefit, getting rid of the bottom feeders and replacing them with, say, like a Clemson or whatever.
Well, Vernon, this is not a publicly traded company where you're answering the stockholders, and I say that for this reason: every one of these universities, like them or not, are part of a charter that guarantees them a membership. And I don't know if there's ever been a case where a school has been kicked out. I'm sure they're probably some reasons why some should have, but I do know that, having been covering the SEC my entire adult life, there's a very strong feeling among the members that, you know, we are here for each other, and I think there's some good in that. Whether you maximize every school to its fullest degree or not, what you don't have in the SEC is what you saw a week ago in the ACC, where one member decided that they were more important than everyone else, and threw a temper tantrum in full view of the whole world. So I think, yeah, you can make a case that is there a more valuable member to the bottom line? But I don't think that really gets in the way. When the SEC was negotiating a television deal a couple of years ago with ESPN, they got a pretty high dollar number for that. And you know, whether it, you know, Vanderbilt's inability to compete for an SEC championship played no role in that at all. Well, thank you for the call. I understand where you're coming from. I'm just giving you the version from the conference. Johnny is in the ATL. Hello, Johnny.
Hey, Paul. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I'm really glad I got through since you're getting ready to interview the commissioner. And I want to give you a little tidbit on what happened when they had Vince Dooley's memorial service a few months ago when he passed away. They had it at Stegman Coliseum, and Governor Kemp spoke, and President Moorhead and several other speakers, and Commissioner Sankey spoke at Vince Dooley's memorial service. And he started talking. He said one of the first things he gets asked is what's the greatest things about being a commissioner of the SEC. And I kid you not, Paul, he says, watching a lot of good SEC football and getting to talk to Paul Finebaum.
I have, Johnny, I've never heard that before. I appreciate you sharing that with me.
I was there, Paul.
Well, it's always good to bring some levity to a memorial service, even though I doubt anybody took him seriously. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Finebaum Show podcast.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.